old man with a vision, shining loud FAS, love and precision, love and Phantom, love and precision. Every episode it brings the inspiration, stories of success from all across the nation, from the small town kids to the big city dreams. He's spreading awareness, breaking through the seams. FAS Succession, it's got it all. Laughter, tears, and moments that'll make your heart fall. From the struggles and triumphs, the trials they face, Jeff Noble's soulful voice brings comfort and grace.
Yeehaw! Welcome! Welcome to the FASD Success Show, episode 153, with me, your host, Jeff Noble. Whether this is your first episode or your 153rd episode, I am just so stoked you're here. I get how busy you are, how hard things are, and I am going to make sure that I have the next hour with you to make sure we give you some good information, because this podcast is all about creating FASD success. How do we do that? We do that by going out and reaching for the wisdom warriors, the folks who are in the trenches, who have stuff to contribute, who have experience, who have knowledge and research and know-how, and we're able to take that to the show and then share it with you so you could make your journey better. And right now, I just want to say hello. I hope you're okay. Again, thanks for being here with me. Thanks for putting up with my show shenanigans. You know, I put feedback for our episode last week. I asked, hey, what did you think of my intro music? Because I've just been messing around with some. And, you know, I did get feedback, which was cool. And it was like equal parts liked it, equal parts didn't like it. And so I was like, that's totally interesting and also awesome. I'm just messing with things. I'm just having a good time testing things. You never know. What if we just created a banger? I'm not even a particular country guy myself. Like, it's like anything. Or it's like me. You know, I could take it in doses. But I just thought it was fun. It's fun, okay? Because I'm sitting here talking to a microphone on my own, you know? So what am I going to do? I got to entertain myself, and hopefully entertaining myself is entertaining you. So I'm feeling good. I'm excited about our guest today. I'm really excited about our episode today. In fact, it's another interview from my time out on the East Coast. We're talking to Mike Howlett, Dr. Mike Howlett, vet MD, like he's a veterinarian. And he's also the dad to our previous podcast interviewee. Actually, it was last month with Aaron Howlett. So if you want to go, you can check out our blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast, and you can listen to his son, because I was there. So I interviewed everybody. It was amazing. And we got such great perspective from dads. And I know engaging dads is an issue for some of our audience. So I wanted to make sure I got you some info on it. But first, if you're a veteran to the show, you know how this goes. I want to make sure that if there's new people listening, or newish people, or people who haven't engaged with our communities, I want to make sure you do so. But today, it's not me doing the shameless self-promotion segment. Oh, no. I'm going to keep this cowboy theme going. And you know who's going to do it? We're going to check in with Cowboy Bob. All right, Cowboy Bob, can you tell them how they could hook up with our community?
Cowboy Bob here. Since Jeff loves to beat a joke to death, let's continue with our Western theme. I've got some darn good trails to point y'all toward that'll sure make your FASD journey a bit easier. First up, why not mosey on over to our bustling Facebook group? It's the heart of our little community at facebook.com/group/FASD forever. Here, you ain't just a lone rider. You're part of a band of caregivers who really get what this trail is all about. We share tips, laughs, and that good old support that keeps us all riding steady. Now, don't let the dust settle on this next bit. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on your favorite platform. Imagine it like getting a regular letter from Jeff. It's that bit of comfort knowing someone's out there spinning yarns to help you through. Jeff might not be waiting on the porch for you. And if he is, send him home. Instead, Jeff will be there in spirit spinning tales and offering up strategies to make your day smoother. And if you're hankering for a deeper look into our talks, check out our blog at fasdsuccess.com/podcast. It's chock full of resources, behind-the-scenes peeks, and all the hearty details from each episode. Lastly, if you're out on the range and craving more of these conversations, follow us at FASD Success on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. So, keep your hats on tight, your boots dusty, and your spirits high. Jeff, can I take off the costume now? Not sure why I had to wear this for a simple voiceover.
Thank you, Cowboy Bob. I will take your feedback and note it for future workings together. But you will do as I say. Awesome. Thanks for doing that. Okay, now let's get into the seriousness here. We are going to be talking to Dr. Mike Howlett. He's not only a seasoned veterinarian hailing from Cumberland County in Nova Scotia, Canada, but he's also a dedicated father and he's deeply involved in the FASD community. He was born and raised in the area, and Mike's journey to his current profession is anything but ordinary. His diverse background includes stints at flight school, firefighter training, and even clown school before he dedicated to pursue veterinarian medicine, and he graduated from the Atlantic Veterinarian College in 2012, and he's also known as Scratch Adams. Dr. Howlett, who likes to be called Mike by his friends and colleagues, he has a unique approach to his medicine, blending his professional expertise with a dose of humor and empathy, and that defines his approach to parenting. Him and his wife, Rochelle, also on the podcast, are parents to two young sons, Aaron and Corey, and they navigate the complexities of raising individuals with FASD. In his professional life, Mike is known as compassionate care for animals, seeing his role not only as a medical professional, but someone who provides comfort to pets and their owners during some of the most challenging times. His personal life is equally committed to the advocacy and education about FASD, striving to improve systems and understanding for families affected by the disability. This is a good one, folks, and I will be back on the other side of the interview to go over a recap and just get you set to have an amazing week. So, with that being said, I'm ready. So, if you're ready, let's go. All right, everybody, here I am with Dr. Mike Howlett. Doctor, thanks for joining me, buddy. I appreciate it.
No problem, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
So, Mike is cool, right?
Mike's great.
Because you are a doctor of the animals.
You got it.
I love it, buddy. Like I was telling you in our group, right? Whenever we post, like, post your pet. And then, boom. I find that a lot of our families have pets, and you know, there's both, you hear about the benefits of service dogs, but then also the dysregulation that might come from certain breeds, other needs, or you know, barking, and could set our guys off. So that's awesome that you do that. So let me go through the journey. Okay, so you have Aaron and Corey, 17 and 11 at home. You were clearly a practicing veterinarian before you acquired children, right?
No, actually, they were along the journey. So
far. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so you went through medical school, right? Which is what it is, right? They call it that.
And same education.
Right. Yeah. While you were dealing with that?
While we were dealing with this, and it's a complicated journey. I don't know.
Okay, here we go. Because it's a great story. So take me there. Okay. So you're going through
We'll go back. Someone's going to ask me about my life and my journey. Here we go through the whole thing.
Let it rip.
Like, I'm going to say my experience is like Forrest Gump. I'm going to do things for a few years and I'm going to flip on back. We roll back. I left high school. I'm going to flight school. I'm going to be a pilot. You know, we're going to do that for a while. The airlines are crashing in 94. There's no jobs. I'm going to university, studying engineering. You know, I get the travel bug. I'm working door-to-door sales, make extra money. I end up in Northern Ontario, meet Rochelle, heading through your neck of the woods, Elliott Lake, Thunder Bay, all those
things. So his wife, for those of you who don't know, she was on a previous episode the podcast with Alan, and she spent summers in Elliott Lake, like, you know how small that place is, and to have that connection. You met her up there too.
She used to work for me. I was her boss, and she's mine.
Well, yeah. It doesn't matter if your name's on the marquee, right? Yeah. Okay. So keep going.
So yeah. So then we end up moving back to Nova Scotia. I'm a Down Easter, born and bred, true and blue noser.
Yeah.
You know, decide that, you know, I'm going to be a firefighter. We're going to go through the level one training, you know, life goes on. We move back to Ontario. We move back home, doing lots of different jobs, working the family business. We get married. We're watching everyone else have kids. We end up into this role. She never told you this, but she went to clown school with me.
Okay. People, I didn't say that, but people didn't know that because you're straight up like, you're the pet Patch Adams.
You got it. Scratch Adams.
So that's already been. Okay. Scratch Adams. Yeah. And Rochelle went to clown school.
Yeah, she'll tell you she's officially retired. And she did that as a very short stint just to humor me along the way.
Where did that come? Like, I want to.
Well, you know.
It sounds like you're like, that seems cool. Let me try that.
Kind of like that. Like I said, you know, that we're not talking typical 4 years, University of Wisconsin, performing arts. You know, we're talking a couple weekends in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we had our own party rental business. You know, we're doing the clowns and the cotton candy. And I get a background in like carnival stuff with my family. So, you know, that's just all natural children's entertainment. I'm working my way through, went back to university. I'm going to get my biology degree now. And I'm doing like commercial clown gigs and birthday parties on the side to make money to pay for this.
With these kids?
No, I don't have the kids yet.
Oh my gosh. So it's already a tornado like figuring your stuff out, right?
Who's Mike, right? Who am I going to be? And I'm sitting there, I'm reaching the end of my fourth year of undergraduate, and I'm like, what am I going to do? Be a teacher? Well, I don't know if I can do that with all those kids. I'm going to be a pharmacist? Don't really like organic chemistry. I'm working at a government research farm, and I'm like, maybe this vet gig won't be a bad deal. So it's harder statistically to get into vet school than med school, especially here in the Maritimes, because there's one school, and that's all you can apply to.
And they only have so many spots.
There's 13 seats.
Bye. So are you like a genius? Like, is it mixed with some intelligence, ADHD?
No, we're not going to go there. So like I said, Forrest Gump.
But the aptitude, though, Forrest Gump wasn't going to medical
school. No.
Forrest Gump wasn't going to get his undergrad degree, right? I know what you mean by different experiences.
Where the wind blows, we're just going.
But have you always, was school easy?
School was easy for me.
That's like my dad. That's good.
So I threw my hat in the ring. I went over there. We're doing the situational interview. Like, I'm prepared for them to ask me, you know, the details of the Krebs cycle, you know, how bodies make an energy. And they're asking me, you know, tell me about the time where you had to do this or this. So, you know, I got a few stories in my back pocket that I keep. I'm a bit of a storyteller.
Yeah.
So like, well, let me tell you about that time I crashed my airplane when I was 18 years old.
So you're bringing all of these.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you that time I was a clown in prison, you know.
You're like the dad from Big Fish.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
most people are comparing me to the guy from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball. You got the eyebrows going on.
Okay, but then you're all of a sudden like, okay, I'm gonna be a vet
and I'm gonna go to vet school. So we're sitting in there. At this point, me and Rochelle have been married for 10 years. Like I said, we're watching everyone else have kids.
Old were you started med school?
30.
That's awesome, guy.
Yeah.
Back to school, if you're listening, dudes, you can always make a change. And do
never it. Too old to learn new.
Okay, skills. Keep going. That's awesome.
So, yeah, we decide we're going to plunge into this adoption thing. You know, like we did all the other stuff.
Yep.
Not happening. Adoption's the way we're going to make our family.
Yeah.
So we start going through it. We end up being presented. Ours is an atypical journey through adoption. I'm going to write a book someday. Maybe I'll get some pointers. It's a good story. We're not going to go into the deep and dirty of that, but through my second year of veterinary school, we end up in Supreme Court. They placed Aaron with us. They took him away from us. And now we got to fight to get him back. So, you know, everyone else is partying, studying, having a good time. We're talking with lawyers and doctors and professionals.
So about this advocacy was right from the get-go.
Well, if we go back, we're probably infamous, you know, when Rochelle starts talking to some of these people in the province. We did good things, but they know us, right? So, you know, one of the questions she gets, someone's like, oh, Michelle, is your husband a veterinarian? I know you. Yeah, I know who you are. So, yeah, she's been working the underdog thing for a long time. So we get Aaron, you know, we're sitting there, bright, shining, four-year-old, happy, bouncy boy. We are oblivious to what we don't know.
You're just full of oxytocin, eh?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're living the dream. We knew that bio-siblings, three out of four of them, him being the fourth, were exposed prenatally to alcohol. Not, you know, Aaron was not supposed to have been, you know, things were good on that front. And we're talking, you know, FASD, what's FASD? What does it mean? What do the words mean? I'm a science guy. So yeah, I know what the words mean. I know what the results are, but I did not know what FASD was until you live it. You can know the word, the acronym, you can know the science.
You can work 8 hours a day and still not know.
Absolutely.
Because I worked in the home with a kiddo, but after my shift, I got to go home.
Yeah.
It wasn't until being a foster parent, because you can't go home.
Can't go home.
That's when you
doesn't turn off. And you know, at first we're, again, being new, not knowing what normal, not normal, not typical is, not really understanding. I was saying to Rochelle last night, I remember getting that first report from Head Start, you know, saying that, you know, he's behind in these areas, and almost being mad and angry, like, he, you know, my kid's not behind, we're doing this. In retrospect, you go back and look, and Rochelle, I can't say enough how much she does, and she's got the lion's share of this thing. She's the one taking the phone calls every day from the teacher. She took off work and she worked with that boy, you know, one-on-one from day one for a few years, which is why he's as successful as he is.
It is so badass.
So we come back and we look at it, and you know, in retrospect, we can look to see, like, we work so hard to get his letters, to, you know, P's and B's and D's and G's. It's the same thing, just flipped all around. You know, get that worked out. Get this kid to know his alphabet. Get this kid to read, you know. He's an avid reader. Like, that kid reads probably six novels a week.
Loves the history.
Fantasy, you name it.
He loves to study.
But, you know, that's Rochelle. But we've seen that disconnect. We've seen that. I mean, big family that I come from, lots of kids. You know, we were Uncle Mike and Aunt Rochelle for years and years. Kids were always with us. But as we see him, you know, growing up, you know, you start hitting 6, 7, 8. You see that split. You see that peer group disappearing, right?
Yeah.
You see those social behaviors.
Yeah, because the developmental trajectory is different for our kids.
So he's either hanging out with 40-year-olds or 4-year-olds. That peer group is gone. And we see that. We're going through that whole FASD journey that your listeners go through. Mm-hmm. The good, the bad, the ugly, all through there. We start to get to these points where we don't have what he needs. We don't have those supports in school. You know, we very quickly, in a parent, becomes, you know, not only did we not know what we didn't know, nobody else that interacts with this kid knows what they don't know. And it doesn't matter how much we teach them, because we're just parents, right? They have no idea.
Even though you're Dr. Mike.
Yeah, even though,
because there comes, as a person without that designation, when I see that in front, that sort of shows me, like, someone went through something to get this designation, and so they know, you know, they kind of know what's.
So that gives us it, you know, like.
But it's not always the case when it comes to beliefs from other people. If they think you're being willful or enabler, you know, not disciplining, not all that stuff, they go after you.
So everything about our experience is absolutely different than everyone else. We know that, you know, we're fortunate enough that we've got supports most other people don't have. We're comfortable financially, you know. Now in school, we're gonna ditch the house.
You grinded to become a veterinarian. You deserve every cent. Because you still, anyway, keep going.
So, you know, we have things that other people don't. And I purposely, when we're going into school, because as you know, as tough as it is, they're not looking at Rochelle. they're looking at me. Now, the true story is this is the power. Like, this is the person here, but they're going to look past her to me. One, because I'm male, and that's the way society does it. Not fair. I'm bigger. I'm louder. You know, my presence.
Well, you're nice. Yeah. Like, so you're disarming, too.
Yeah. But I would wear my lab coat into the school meetings. I would wear my stethoscope.
Yeah.
I would wear my coat that says Dr. Mike to make sure they knew that.
Yeah, like you can't pull one over. Yeah.
I don't make people call me doctor. I don't, you know.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. You said I'm Mike. I didn't know you were. I was like oblivious. Yeah.
But when we're going to go into those meetings.
Shit, yeah. Yeah, man. You got to pull that card. That's leverage, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's coming out. You know, you want me to call you mister. That's fine. I'll call you mister, but I'm doctor. Right. So, you know, and if that's what I got to do to advocate for my kids.
Well, yeah, it's to break through the noise and because there's stigma on parents regardless. No, I would use anything. And it's a shame that you even have to, that they're not there saying, your mom and dad, how can we help? Yeah. That's a fallacy, right? That doesn't happen.
So, I mean, you know, we're working to change that. Michelle's working to change that.
I love your wife too. And I want to talk about you because you are playing a role in this as well.
Well, I mean, she needs support.
Yeah. You know?
So
yeah,
so I work 12 hours a day. She's the one that, like I said, she's dealing with the phone calls.
I agree.
I'm there to help her do that. You know, if I'm going to make supper, I don't make supper, you know, when I get home. If I'm going to feed the kids, we're going to tag in and go on here. All right, I'm going to pick up whatever happened. You got 15 projects. I'm going to give you space to do that. But
how do you this is a personal question for me. Like, you have to say you're at work and it's time has come for a family's pet they've had for 15 years and you manage that transition and then you have to go home.
My job is traumatic. It's
then how is that? Do vets compartmentalize? Is it like a...
I can't speak for everybody.
For you, yeah, that's fair. Right? Like, that's fair.
You know, people have different perceptions about my job. You know, either it's all puppies and kittens or it must be horrible.
Yeah.
You know, end of life for all
people. Yeah. But it's that spectrum,
part,
right?
That part is like a gift that I get to.
It's an honor, I know. But like for someone who does it, that's like, but you're in that moment with that family.
So we carry a heavy burden, right? So for me, the hard part about that is that emotional baggage.
Yeah.
Because it's never just the pet. That pet
was their family.
That pet was their family. That pet was the last connection they have to their deceased husband, or that pet got them through chemo, you know, that whole thing. And that, I'm a softie. I'm 6'2", 350 plus, you know, I'm a teddy bear. That weighs on you. You keep that in your heart.
Well, then you got to go home.
And then we got to go home.
And tag in. But aren't you exhausted?
Yeah. The FAS is exhausting.
But you see what your wife is doing and you jump in because you see what's going on.
Yeah, it's a team. It really is. It's different as a dad, right? You know,
that's what I want to get into. How is it different as a dad?
She's got that friend group. She's got, you know, the moms with FASD, you know, she's
trying.
And that's for everybody. That is for everybody, but it's harder for guys. It's harder for guys to kind of, you know, be vulnerable, to be shared. Yeah, I'm the men tough guy.
Right? The man fixers. Guy. We're the fixers.
That's right. And I'm a science guy, right? I'm literal.
Yeah.
I'm A, B, C. What's the problem? What I solve them for X.
Yeah,
you know, here's the fire. I'm putting it out. Yeah, you know, we're getting from A to B the shortest distance. And I'm literal.
We're not emotionally processing this for 6 hours. Like, you know, I hear you.
When it comes to FASD and Aaron and Corey, man, the squirrels are out. The frustration's there. I don't know how you can do this. How can you not see this? Like, A, B, C, it doesn't work. It drives me crazy. It frustrates me. You know, I know it. Scientifically, I know it. I know.
But it's emotional to your kids, right?
I can't rationalize in my brain how you can think like that.
And the difference is then you don't have other dudes to commiserate with.
That's right. You know,
that's some of the difference.
And it's great. I mean, we should have a dad's group. I don't know if I'd get anybody to talk to me, right? So you want to talk to me, sure. Give me a call.
Yeah.
You know, I'll think of Michelle's number. But
yeah, we communicate different.
We're going to get in the room. We're going to stare at each other. We're going to nod and grunt. And then, we're going to get something to drink and we'll cook a steak.
And then, you know, when you're with other FASD dads, then it's like, it's one crack about the kid and you're like, okay, you know what's up.
Yeah.
You know other parents. You can sniff them out, you know, the way they react, what they say. And you're like, oh,
I remember the club.
Yeah. You know what's up. And then men are low key like, yeah, we got it. But that's so fulfilling. Even the grunting, watching the game or whatever. But then slowly, you know, talking about that through. Have you found any of that here this week?
Well,
because you've been so busy.
Yeah, I've been like kind of running, trying to keep things around here. But you can see it, right? It's those 3-second eye connection. I got you, man.
Yeah.
Where you come from? I get you. You don't have to tell me what you're going through. I know. I know what it's like when no one understands and you kind of feel all alone and you're in this world. Like even my dad. You know, my dad's great. He's fantastic. Mike, I tell these kids, like, 10 times every time I see him, don't do that shit. I don't know why. I don't know why either, but I can tell you why.
Yeah.
But I don't know why they do that. You don't waste your breath. You don't.
That's the thing.
You got to change that.
We're rational creatures, right? And I say, I find myself, when you're in it, you're living in a state of WTF.
Oh, yeah.
What the F did you say? What the F did you do? What the F are you thinking? Yeah. What the F is going on?
Yeah. We go through, you know, there's great times and there's good times and there's happy times, but there's times where you just threw a fucking grenade in there and your whole family's blowing up.
Yeah.
You know, we want to talk about dark stuff. You know, these kids have no filter. They've got nothing.
There was
one time Aaron went to the bus stop. You know, we're in a nosy neighborhood sort of area. He went and said something. He wants to be cool. He wants to fit in.
That's what they do, yeah.
You know, next thing we know, we got DCS knocking on our door.
DCS, you have to explain what that
so
is.
So Department of Children's Services.
So, okay, right? So, like Children's Aid.
Children's Aid, Children's Services. They bang on the door. You know, like, we're all, where the hell did this come from? We're pulled in different rooms. We're actually just in the placement phase of our adoption for the youngest one, right? So everyone's going to different rooms. We're getting interviewed. Have no clue. No one, what's going on here? Oh, you know, Aaron was at the bus stop. And, you know, he told us that you're giving this small child poisonous veterinary medicine. What? Yeah, so I'm going to do an investigation. What are you giving this kid? You bring stuff home, like, and they have to. Right? They have to.
They got to
come and do that.
Yeah.
But as a family,
and the first time, right?
Yeah. So you know, full disclosure on what he was talking about is, you know, we had what's called bitter apple spray at home. So it's just a real sour stuff you put on like casts and bandages so dogs don't lick it.
Yeah, bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, bitter apple.
Yeah. It's crab apple. All of a sudden that turns into, you know, somebody poisoning the child. The whole traumatic, you know, what's going to happen? We're in the middle of an adoption. They didn't do anything wrong. Like, are they going to take the little one away? Take the big one away? What's going to happen? You know, that's the hand grenade of FASD. An innocent statement out of context to the wrong person, and boom.
No filter. Yeah. Impulse.
So you're sitting there for, you know, 6 months waiting for that final report to come back to say, yeah, there's nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah, you just said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are fine.
Yeah.
And they have to do it.
To this.
Yeah.
They have to do it.
Yeah.
I get that.
But your first time, you're like, I'm doing everything I can for this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your relationship with Aaron like? Like, as you were going through this, I'm sure ebbs and flows.
Oh, yeah. It comes and goes. The whole journey is such a roller coaster. As much as I try to be the eternal optimist, right? So maybe, you know, Rochelle seeing how much negative stuff we got coming down the road, and not a negative person, but you know, she's worried about the law,
yeah,
the lawyers and the homeless, and
well, because she hears risk factors, and so you want to be prepared.
You know what the statistics
scary are. Yeah.
And as much of the science guy I am, I want to get that driver's license, I want to get that prom in, I want to get that, you know, I'd like to see
you want this experience
normal, or as normal as much as possible. So yeah, it's tough. It's one day, you know, you've got that hand grenade. The next day you're like, going for driving lessons, you know, and Aaron's a charming kid, you know. And,
dude, I think I'm going to play yours first and Aaron's after because once they hear your kid is phenomenal. And I know they put on the best mat, you know, he's trying his hardest, but I got to spend lots of time with him. And he was still, even though sometimes you could tell he was a little tired, it took a second, but he was so nice. And I bet you that's his general disposition because he was in a safe spot and everyone was accepting. That's what I love these places for.
He's a good kid. He makes stupid choices.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said
sometimes
that.
Sometimes unsafe.
Mm-hmm. And he said that's why he needs the people. And that is the money right there. If you can get them to buy in to at least 50 on that, yeah, you're good. Yeah.
So yeah, we don't know what that journey looks like for Aaron. You know, like as tired as we are, and you know, at the end of the line, you know, he graduates this year. Maybe it's time to get out the nest. He's not ready. It's not going to happen. No. I can say all I want. You're turning 18, and that door's closed, buddy.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
That's
not happening.
You know, yeah. If we do that, we might as well just walk into the morgue and sign that.
Yeah, he just needs more percolating, man, yeah, you know, okay. Because the brain, the FASD brain grows differently and it takes longer and it looks different. But absolutely, by creating this environment as much as possible, look, like your kid's awesome, you know, and it's messy is what you're saying.
Oh, it's messy.
But you could still have this result, but you know, if at the end of the day, if it's still about your kids, you know.
There's absolute gut-wrenching, horrible days where, you know, if FASD was a person, I'd throw punches.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, I hate it. And then, you know, then there's those good days, right? There's those periods where you see him shot yesterday. Yeah, he's a rock star. You know, he feels it and he looks it. And
yeah.
Fallout from that.
Because he's an handsome boy about. Too, right?
And, yeah, he's a good-looking kid. You know, the epitome of the hidden disability, right? Like he's gonna fake it till he.
I didn't tell. That's why I asked if you was your kid.
Yeah,
remember, like because they mentioned talking to him, and then I was looking and I saw him, but I said, "Is this the boy?" Because outward appearances, but that's people don't know the thousands of hours of work and resources going into that.
The kid's been with specialists since the time he came to us. You know, we're doing play therapy and occupational therapy and vision therapy and speech therapy.
But he's doing well because he's supported.
Yeah.
Our kids do well when they're supported. And then the double X, they do well. And then people will say, okay, they're standing on their own 2 feet. Let's take away the support.
Absolutely. He's doing great this year in school. Let's back off a bit. Let's give him the normal experience. Oh, great. And we tried that.
Yeah.
And then they called us, you know,
yeah.
It's the police, it's the principal, it's the suspension. Great. How'd your plan work?
It didn't. Yeah.
We told you that.
Okay. That's true. You're doing a great job. Even, you know, it's to feel all these feelings to go through all this. But then you're like, that's not enough for you guys. Now you have to take on the.
Let's get another one.
Okay. Like, not only did we get another one. But now you're like, let's start something in the province, So Rochelle's side of this, you can listen to episode 144 and you go to FASDsuccess.com/podcast and you could grab all our episodes, but we want Mike's perspective. So Rochelle's doing all this work in the trenches, frustrated, like she said, no services. So is she just like, I'm doing this?
Yeah.
I'm doing
this. Taking no.
Yeah, she's like enough.
Tenacious.
Yeah, and then she plugs into the power of the ponytail, Alan, and now they're spurring each other on. That's what she needed, right? Like another matchstick. Yeah.
I can't be that mirror.
Yeah, that's right. And so then she's like, we're going to do this. Yeah. And what were you saying? We're crazy or?
No.
Okay.
Here we go. Buckle up, buttercup. I'll make dinner. You stay on the phone.
And they did. And so you had the one in September. Well attended.
Well attended.
Everything
exceeding expectations. I mean, for this journey, as much as we've got the support, nobody listens. You can call up. Like, there's nothing for us. We got supports because Rochelle demands those supports.
And you come in with the lab coat.
But there's nothing for anybody else, or very little for anybody else. And if you are Joe Schmo who can't pull out your own lab coat, then
if you're working down at the docks, mm-hmm.
You know. And I'm a common roots guy, right? Like these are my people.
Yeah,
right? This is where I come from.
You no way do you put on any vibes that there's any pretentiousness at all. I don't pick any of that. So I get your.
So I mean, this is just natural. Like the underdog, we're gonna fight. We're gonna change it. We're gonna make a difference. And I'm in the background. I'm the supporting role. But every day they're pulling. Like I'm crawling over.
Yeah, you are. And what a big.
That's what it is. It is.
It's stepping outside your comfort zone.
Yeah,
I'm because you could be because but at work you're Dr. Mike, you're the man.
Yeah.
And now you're this, it's new, it's uncomfortable. Yeah. But you're still
my wheelhouse.
But you're still in it. Like you still are in it because of all the other stuff you've done, right?
And it needs to be done.
And it needs to be done. I saw you. And then even last night, you were asking great questions. When I hear those questions, that's someone who wants to learn, you know, to advocate, to be in these positions. You know, you're talking to Mrs. Butterworth about Tuttle's and making sure he has his tick medication. But now on this other role, you're trying to recruit physicians, you know, to make that other clinic run.
Let's find out what we need to make this.
And that's a new skill set. Absolutely. And that comes with not understanding and that uncomfortability. So you get the reins, get the hang of it. Now the second conference, which I thought doing it almost right away, like you did, was smart.
Actually. Well, you know what? 8 months ago, we're selling hot dogs and hucking cotton candy so that we can pay.
Hey,
And largely thinking that, you know, we're putting this on our own credit cards, you know. And that was the agreement between Rochelle and Alan. We'll fund it. If we can get 15 people, great.
Yeah.
15 turned to 25, turned to 50 to like, well, we got to move venues, right? We're going to go to the hotel. It's bigger than the little auditorium.
Yeah.
And once they're there, they're like, okay, there's the appetite. This is what we need. This is the crack in the window that we can get in here. And then it just steamrolled. Like it didn't stop. Like they had their event on September 9th. On September 10th, they're on the phone. Like, you know, where are we doing? What are we going next?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, grand plan. Initially, it was like, we're doing 5 of these next year. We're going to the four corners.
Yeah.
Not feasible.
Well, but you're excited because there's, now you're like, people are seeing this when you're talking to social workers or people that maybe not exposed, but you're bringing the science and the logic and they're like, I have all these kids, man.
Yeah. 13 years of nothing. Like, you know, we're calling, what do you have for us? I don't have nothing. What do you know? I don't know nothing. What is it for this? I don't have nothing. And then it's just like, bang, okay, we got the spotlight, you know, now's the time to run with it. Now we have the ear of the people. Now we've got, you know, the eyes are on us and it just needs to be done.
I think people showed up yesterday because it, like the capacity, right?
Yeah.
I think people just brought other people, which is great.
And that's what we see. I mean, we could look through the event they had last time and, you know, from our journey, we know a handful of those people. And then we know that those people brought a handful of people. And it's like that, you know, I tell two people, you tell two people, you tell two people commercial for the hair staff from like the 80s. And this time around, you know, we know that those people have told these people, you gotta go listen to these guys. And
yeah, like they're onto something.
Once you get that realization, you know, like you said, it comes back to you don't know what you don't know. But now you know a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you realize, you know, how does this affect you in your daily life as a teacher, as a social worker, you know, as a professional that's interacting with these guys? It's got to be like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's everywhere. Yeah, yeah. It's like it's opened up. It's that paradigm shift. Yeah. And then it's a beneficial for the kids because they're given a chance because it's no longer punishment, but hopefully towards support.
And part of that comes with the curse. Michelle calls it the curse she got from Alan. Everybody I look at now probably
has a curse. It's the curse of knowledge.
That's right.
And that is a thing because it's frustrating when you could go into a place and go like, he's overstimulated, like turn the lights down and like give him some food.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, right. But so it is the curse of knowledge. And you have to treat everyone like as if they don't know without talking down to people, talking with people.
So sort of that little bit of justification comes from, you know, with FASD, every day is different. Everything is different. And, you know, what works today doesn't work tomorrow. And if we can get like the caregivers to buy into that, the teachers, the EAs and stuff like that, the resource teachers to really get that. I mean, so we're sitting there this winter and we know now that some of these people have heard from September, the feedback, and again, you know, they're not letting up on this. They're going to take this to everybody. And they call up and they say, yeah, see, we're talking about what's working. Things are going good. You know, Rochelle, because she's the one who takes phone calls. You know, Rochelle, we take a look at some of the other kids and we just treat them like we treat Aaron. How's that working for you? This kid's doing great.
Isn't it?
It's how justifying is that, right?
You yeah, know, yeah, yeah.
Listen to us last year. You wouldn't be here.
Yeah, but it takes like people to experience these symptoms, but then also see the kid when they're doing well. And like, this kid is a good kid and something's right. Cause how could there be the contrasting? And then you put a little education. Cause for me, that was for me. I remember sitting there, like I had other training, but the syllables, the words, it was too much for me. And then when someone spoke the way I understood it, and then I'm thinking about what she's saying and I'm playing out scenarios in my head and I'm going, oh my gosh, that's freaking funny. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then it switches from, you know, this kid isn't giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time.
If I could say anything to any of these, you know, people who interact, I would say, don't be afraid to listen. To listen to what this is, because that is that paradigm shift. It's that change of thought. You've been doing something your way, or the way you were taught, or the way that you have practiced, whatever perspective you're doing, and now you got to shift it. It's okay to change. It's okay to be different. And there's no harm in changing the way that you're going to perceive these kids or these people or, you know, this family.
That's a great answer. And we'll have a couple more questions before we get kicked out of the hotel. Mums are coming to me saying, how do I get dad on board? I'm the one doing the learning, the listening, and dad is a little bit more disengaged. What would your advice be for moms to approach, or anyone to approach the partner that might not be as invested? Because it takes two, right?
It takes two, absolutely. So there's always going to be one that's in front and one that's lagging in behind.
Yeah.
So maybe it's taking a look at that person and seeing, you know, what's the holdup? Not in a confrontational way. Sure. I'm not going to go and ask you like, hey, buddy, what's your problem here?
Yeah.
You know, trying to put yourself in their shoes and say, what is it about this that they're not bought in on? Like, you know, I want to believe he's normal. I want to believe
that's the grief.
Good, yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. How do we get around that? That's going to be individual. Don't give up. Like, keep going. Like, thick-headed, stonewalled, gonna come around.
Well, let's look at the fruits of your 14-year labor.
Yeah.
It happens, yeah. You know, and it can happen.
So maybe someone's going to be on their own for a bit on this journey, but, you know, maybe all it is he's making supper, or maybe he's taking them skating.
Yeah.
Maybe you're getting that few minute breaks. Maybe that in your dynamic is all that's going to be. Take it for what it is. Don't give up. Keep going.
Don't stop. Right. Yeah. It's worth it.
Guys are thick at it.
Yeah. Yeah. But come on board, because it doesn't mean
so
like you can't fix it, but you could certainly manage it so well so that they do well.
If you can't get there, maybe with your partner, then you're going to reach out, whether it's the mom's group or, you know, whatever parent group, whatever you need to get your support. There are great people out there that can help you with that.
Yeah. Who are going through it every day. You know, that's the point, is when I bring people on here who are in a position, when it comes down to it, they still lose their shit with their kids, you know, like neurotypical or not. Yeah. You're a human being. It's just, where are these behaviors coming from? When you can change that, you know, and it's, even though when you're emotionally exhausted, you know, your cognition isn't right, your executive functioning. So but be gentle on yourself, too, when you have those days where
there's days you're going to absolutely lose it. Even everything that we know, everything we know about it in the moment, and when everything's gone to hell and it's screaming and yelling and meltdowns, and whether it's us or him, you know, it's both ways. But, you know, when everything's gone by, take a breath, take a moment, start over when you can.
Cuddle your dog.
Yeah.
Cuddle your dog. Dude, you're real. What's next for you? I know, like, what, like, in your role, like, because face it, you know, we're the backup quarterbacks, right? That's what Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, does that. Like, moms are the starting quarterbacks or whoever the lead parent is, and we're the backup. You know, we got to take reps. We don't get as many. You know, we have to know the playbook. But then, you know, once in a while, we have to go in and start. Everybody's nervous. That's what he says. But then once you get going, but if you look at that as that's your role, know the playbook, take some reps, and you're going to have to go in at any point if the main quarterback goes down. That's the hot tag, you know, the wrestling hot tag. I got to tag you in. So your head isn't in the sand. You could, you know, you could go in and support that way because it is worth it. And they are worth it.
They are worth it.
They are because they're beautiful and your kid is awesome. But so for you personally, like, where would you like to develop? Where do you see yourself?
I like being in the background. You know, that's my niche. I don't need the accolades. I don't need to be on the poster. I'm an ugly fella anyway.
And I have face for radio. That's what I had to say. Yeah, yeah.
Well, his eyebrows are luscious.
Oh, yeah.
And all the girls want these.
Well, it's a calling card. It's, you know, a big heart's attractive, buddy. A big, like, empathy and seeing where people are coming from. I think that's awesome. What else would you do if you weren't a vet? Like, you know, when you say, hey, maybe that would have been cool.
Oh my God.
What are some of the things that you would?
Geez. I've been fortunate enough that the wind just blew me wherever I needed to be, you know? That's a question I don't really have an answer.
That's for. Fair too.
I've drove taxi. I've drove heavy equipment. I've flown airplanes. I put my hands inside animals' guts. Like I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe
guts,
tired.
Guts and butts. You know, hey, see, you're pretty good at that. Okay. Then what do you do when you're not doing all of that? Like, what do you do when you're just chilling? Like, are you a nerd? Like I'm a video game guy. What do you do?
I would say since kids came, I haven't really played video games.
But what do you do? What do you do to chill?
I'm a crazy Halloween guy. Like over the top, bananas.
Like all your prepping.
Down the street, I got fire monsters and light shows and lasers. That's what I do for fun. Yeah.
Like the whole thing. Oh, now you're gonna have to send me.
That's right. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
We took that last year. And I've been doing this for a long, long time, the whole haunted house thing. And just kind of organically builds over time to now. Rochelle's like, you know, knock it off. There's no more room in our house. Yeah, we look like an episode of Hoarders in our basement. But I took that last year. Again, like I said, we're selling hot dogs and hucking cotton candy. I just put up a donation for fan sign at the end of my driveway. We brought in like, you know, $1,000, $1,200, something like that. Just people want to see the haunted house, throwing money down.
Yeah.
They don't even know what the sign means. But if you're going to stop and talk, I'm going to guarantee you, Michelle's giving you a card and telling you about fetal alcohol.
But you're providing value. So they're like, yeah, this is great effort. Because you just, that's reciprocity.
Yes.
Reciprocity. Dude, you're cool. It was awesome. And do you feel good after this conference?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel good. And I know they have an interesting journey.
Yeah. So. Well, you have to bring me back and lock me in a room with people for 8 hours. But I love the whole vibe, you know, as a Northern Ontarian, you guys are my people, you know, like chill. And you guys are doing great.
Yeah. It's bigger and better. You know, I think we could pack that room with 500 people. And
you could have.
With 3 days.
But you don't know at first. Like me neither. When I did my first one, you have to pick how many hotels. You have to have a block of hotels. And if you don't sell them, you're on the hook.
That's right.
So I remember my first thing too. And I'm like, yeah, let's do 50. And then you get past 50 and you're like, oh, okay. But you think, but you don't know. And then when there's dollars on the line, like.
It's 2 weeks ago. Like there's no money. We got to get dollars in the bank account.
Yeah.
And we're looking at thousands of dollars to host this event. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But it comes through.
It
faked, right? Blind faith.
Yeah. But it did. Pounding the phones. It all comes to fruition. Are you going to come back and do this again?
Absolutely.
Dude, it was fun. It was great to meet you, man.
Thanks, Jeff.
It really was, man. Thanks for doing this.
Dr. Mike, Patch Adams, Scratch Adams, all the Adams, thank you so much for doing this, my man. It was great insight, great talking to you. You are a cool dude, and yeah, just thanks a lot. Okay, I want to go through this quick, but also thorough, succinct, get it in. All right, what did he talk about right out of the way? He talked about his eclectic, you know, I don't have another word, journey about becoming a vet, which includes like flight school. He wanted to do that, engineering, clown school. He even quoted this. I'm going to do things for a few years. I'm going to flip on back. Basically, like the first lesson, and it's not even really related to FASD, it's never too late. It's never too late to change paths. It's never too late to change directions. It's never too late to change course. I guess I can relate this back to FASD when I'm on coaching calls, when I'm working with our online community and the families. Part of the paradigm shift, part of that shift from moving from punishing an individual to supporting an individual on the spectrum, I often hear when people realize, you know, is it too late? Is it too late for my kid? Is it too late for my loved one on the spectrum? Can we turn things around? Well, it's never too late. It is never, ever, 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 ever too late at any point, at any time, for someone to have their brain accommodated, for a parent to have their feelings and hardships validated. It's never too late for that, my friends. Okay, it's never too late, right? He discussed his family life. He talks about the integration of his kids into his educational and professional journey, because that's hard doing what he did. And I thought, oh, were they after the journey? And he said, no way, they were actually along the journey. It's both highlights the challenges and joys of balancing his demanding veterinarian studies with being a present parent. It's the importance of support. And, you know, you need support and resilience. Resilience is massive. And he dives into his family's initial encounters with FASD, particularly when he was talking about his son, Aaron. He emphasized the difference between academic knowledge and practical experience, right? And I know this for facts, and he could say no truer statements, but you can know the word FASD, you can know the acronym, you can know the science, but he says, but I did not know what FASD was until you lived it, till I lived it. And that is the truth. And so, you know, often when I talk about advocacy, it's not about getting people to totally understand, because they won't. They can't. There's no way. But the goal then is to get other people to empathize with the challenges and the struggles and also the strengths that you, your family, and your loved ones on the spectrum have, right? Then he talks about advocacy, and we talk about, I like to get real, and he shared the strategy for ensuring his voice was heard. And he would wear his lab coat into the school meetings. That's a boss move. We don't all have one, although that would be cool if you got one and you could put like badass mom, you know, or put your name and then BAM in acronyms, like badass mom. I love it. Or BAD, badass dad. Oh, come on. Come on. I got to fire up the store here. But he used it, right? He said, that's leverage, right? If I'm going to call you Mr., you're going to call me doctor. And then he talked about the continued advocacy, and he stressed the importance of having the community understand an actual targeted supports. And he says he knows that they're fortunate enough to get the supports more than other people have. And he also talks about how they have to persist and persist and persist and persist and persist. And that he knows that not everybody has a lab coat. Not everybody is a doctor. So he could only imagine and emphasize to people how tough it really is for other families. He talked about the stigma that parents face and the necessity of even advocating in schools. And he said, it's a shame that you even have to do that. Like, they're not there saying, you're a mom and dad, how can we help? They're saying, well, you're not doing this, your kid's not doing that. He also talked about, you know, his personal life and the emotional weight of his veterinarian work. I love animals, but I can't watch any harm to them. I know, even those dodo videos where it shows them awful at first and then it shows them awesome after, can't even do it. Can't even do it. And he talks about that, and he described it as an honor and a heavy burden. He shares it's never just a pet. The pet was their family. This weighs on you. You know, I lost my dog not too long ago, so I get it. But I guess trying to bring it back is that sometimes we don't think about the emotional layer, the weight that dads are dealing with outside of it, outside of the arena of caregiving, right? Because he also opened up about the practical challenges he faces as a father, where the expectations of society often limit open emotional expression among dudes, right? He notes that it's difficulty in finding peer support. It's harder for guys to be vulnerable, to be sharing. I'm asking you, the audience, what do you think about that? I'm also under the opinion, right? The men were guys, were fixers. And I know it's different for women. They're processors. Not to say that they don't fix a problem, but women don't go to that necessarily all the time right away. Dads do, which makes us different. Not better, just different. So just something I think to consider, that there's actually gender-specific barriers to this. The good news is online, I see, like in our coaching programs, we have way more dads, way, way, way more dads. And it's promising and it's excellent. But while we're advancing, there's still lots of room, as you can see, for improvement. And what else? He talks about, he had the trouble in the complexities of managing FASD at home, especially when there was, you know, those public misunderstandings that could lead to serious consequences, like the investigation from child services. That story just shares there's challenges that can arise that are completely unpredictable. That's what I should be saying. So that's why community support is so important. So when stuff hits the fan, people know you, people know your kid, and it's very important, you know. And he concludes that institutional support for families, there should be more. We know that. But the cool thing is he's working towards changing it. His family is working towards changing it. He talked about one of the big things. He talked about stepping out of his comfort zone. I didn't know he wasn't in charge of the IT when I was there. He's like, you should have told me. Yeah. And damn it, Jeff, I'm a doctor, not an IT guy. Speaking of which, that Scotty character in Star Trek, now that I think about it, he wasn't very helpful, huh? Oh, he's saying he's a doctor. He must have been a union guy. Can't step outside the boundaries. I'm just kidding. Mike is stepping outside of his comfort zone, learning the language. He's going, he's trying, he's going to these meetings. And that's why he's saying it's so key for parents to keep going. Like the importance of advocacy and persistence. Like, so think about that. There's special challenges, balancing professional and personal responsibility and advocacy. And we're fixers, right? So I just want to sum this up with a couple key points. Here's a couple of things you could do to straight up engage daddies, okay? So this is just my opinion. I just want you to mind your yeah buts. Yeah, but I tried that. Yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. And so even if, you know, even if we're not getting along right now, I can still get through. Even if he has not reached the point of understanding that I would like, I'm going to get better so I can help him teach. You get my point, okay? So, number one, lead by example. Show dads the power of stepping up and getting involved. So just like Dr. Mike, he went into the schools, he advocated at schools. What you want to do is encourage dads to dive into the meetings and speak their minds. They have a unique perspective, a unique insight into this. So, mama, if you're the one that is doing all the advocating, lead by example and tell them it's okay. Bring them into the action. Sometimes dads need to see things firsthand. We're visual folks for the most part. Invite them to join like a therapy session or a school meeting, but with no pressure that they have to perform. Mike's story of balancing work with attending important meetings highlights like how crucial even the presence of dads can be. Open up the conversation. Listen, I know some of you have probably been married for umpteen years, and I get it. But I also do understand the dynamics of FASD in a relationship, in a marriage. Not only did I deal with it myself, but I've also been working with families for a really long time. And when we open up people to talk about something, or when somebody finally does, we as educators, you know, and the caregivers who are the primary educators, have a propensity to then want to teach, to then want to point out what things they could do better. And perhaps what I am saying is just engage in the conversation and validate what they go through and how tough that must be. Because, you know, the dudes, we feel as like we're protectors, and oftentimes we can't do a lot of the protecting, especially not in the way we would like to, that our animal instincts would like us to. And it doesn't feel good or see good when we hear or see our loved ones in a rough situation, or even our kiddos that are struggling. So like, open them up to it. We don't always have to offer solutions. And divide and conquer, you know, engage dads by integrating them into the daily routine. But don't have expectations of what their participation would look like, especially if they're just starting or they just want to try and do it now. You know, dads will come out of their holes and they'll say, okay, I'm going to try it out. But they might be, you know, ushered right back in, and they scurry right back in if we're not making them a part of it, making them feel competent and confident. And last but not least, you got to celebrate those victories, man. I say celebrate those victories with your kiddos, and you have to make it a point to celebrate with dads and what they bring to the table and who they are. And every small win or a moment of success when dads contribute should be a big deal, just like when your kiddo does something, but not in the same way, not in the same way, with dignity, love, respect. It reinforces that their involvement isn't just helpful, it's invaluable. And I know I'm saying dads, but I'll also say same-sex couples too, because often one takes the role of one parent and one takes the role of another parent. So don't at me about that. And just when I say dads, you could say the other spouse who is maybe not on the same page. Because when you guys get on the same page, it is excellent. And when you're celebrating the small victories, you're going to start to feel good too. So could you imagine? Could you imagine? You know, by now, hopefully, you're listening to our podcast every week. And when you can, and you're listening to old episodes, and you're getting better. And then you start to see the small wins that your kids are doing. And then they start to feel more competent, and they become more compliant. That's right. That's what I said. And then you do the same thing. You notice the small victories with your husband, and you notice and you empathize with how tough it is and what they're dealing with and their mindset towards things, even if you're the one that does most of the shit. Even if, okay? So we think differently. Spouses are different human beings, but the best way to do it is to engage and don't expect, because expectations are just premeditated resentments, man. And that's how marriages end. That's how things fall apart. I know there's a lot of marriages out here that are kicking ass and doing well. And tell me, what do you do? Let me know. Write me, or if you see the post on social media, let us know. Let us know what you thought. What do you do? What does your family do? Because you're trying. If you're all the way here at this time in my podcast, fellas, and you're still listening to me, go on. You are going to be successful. There is no question. I know things might not be as you want them to right now, but I'm here to tell you it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. I love you. I love your families. I love your sweet face. Don't forget, we will be back here, same bat time, same bat channel. Subscribe, likes, you know, share the vibe, all that good stuff. So with that being said, let's get a little honky tonk on the way out. I love everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.